Welcome to the Perimenopausal Mamas Podcast for hormonal mamas who want to reclaim their own natural state of health to thrive and raise healthy kids. I'm Dr. Lisa Weeks, naturopathic doctor in Toronto, Canada. I'm a perimenopausal mama to my toddler named Stuart.
And I'm Dr. Toni Reed. I'm a naturopathic doctor, birth doula, and hypnobirthing educator in Calgary, Alberta. And I'm a perimenopausal mama to my little girl, Frankie. The information in this podcast is for educational and entertainment purposes only. It is not meant to substitute professional medical advice. Always consult with your licensed healthcare provider. Welcome, everyone. Thanks so much for joining us today. Today, I'm really, really glad in a way, but not glad to be talking about this topic. I'm talking today with Dr. Aoife Earls, who's a naturopathic doctor in Oakville, Ontario. Who has a training in psychology and biology and has a great background in psychoneuroimmunology. And she's been digging more into working with the idea of grief and how we experience grief and how we move through grief. And I really wanted to talk about this topic because of some of the experience that I've had recently. And I thought, if I've been having some of these experiences, I really have a feeling that I'm not alone. Not only have we been, again, dealing with a pandemic this year, and again, we're kind of recording at the beginning of June 2020, so that has been really, you know, hitting a lot of us around the world. Now, we're also kind of collectively grieving and addressing and protesting the loss of people's lives, especially people who are Black, Indigenous, people of color, and really looking at the systems around that has created that. And while all of that is happening, we are also experiencing life. And when we experience life, we also experience loss. So I have unfortunately had the experience of losing a really good friend on April 20th. And so that whole idea of loss and having that experience and creating this this even level of more surrealness than what has already been going on, I really have been desiring the need to talk about it and really kind of examine it and look at it and seeing how we can really support each other in this. So thanks so much, Aoife, for joining me today and being willing to have this conversation.
It's my pleasure. I'm absolutely happy to talk.
Yeah. So, and I guess I really even don't know where to start, because there's so many different aspects of grieving. And I think even when I was starting to look at my own grief in terms of losing my friend, I really was almost surprised the fact that that there's a grief process around so many other aspects of our life that we don't even sometimes necessarily think about. We think about grief when it comes to losing loved ones, but I don't think we think about grief with other necessarily parts of our life or different events in our life, like a pandemic or like other relationships where people aren't dying, but we just end the relationship, like a divorce, like, you know, kids moving away, or even like different stages of our life, like perimenopause and menopause.
Absolutely. It's, I think the biggest, most, it's a decentering process around grief, is that you can have grieving for really anything. Mm-hmm. And your experience is ultimately whatever's created that loss and that absence in your life is what will trigger that expression. The challenge we have with grief is that once that ball starts to roll, it rolls until it's finished. And most of that is because grieving a loss for humans is really about our ability to attach to one another, but also to attach to ideas, to attach to concepts, to attach to even pieces of our own identity. And it's about sort of creating a construct for ourselves in a safety within our world, right? We know who we are. We know what we look like. We know what we are to somebody else. We know what our job is. These things make our brain feel safe. And it's how we create memory. And it's how we form understanding of the world from when we're really, really small. And so when we have things removed that we have these strong emotional attachments to, we will go through the process of grief, which really is an experience of this loss, which includes like every range of emotion you can think of. So fear can be there, anger, despair. Like everyone has, like you said, this sort of idea that grief is only associated with the loss of a loved one, perhaps in death. But there's many different types of grief. And currently what's going on within the world is a huge experience of a couple of things. We have collective grief. So there's an understanding of how our world should look, and that's shifting. We also have a huge amount of ambiguous grief. So when I started really delving into the research with ambiguous grief, it kind of pissed me off, frankly, because I felt, well, these things aren't ambiguous, they're real. So ambiguous grief is like sort of things that maybe somebody else wouldn't understand your experience, but it's a loss to you. So for example, leaving without saying goodbye is a concept in ambiguous grief, and it can happen for all kinds of things: divorce, an adoption, miscarriage, natural disasters like we're experiencing, like leaving work right now for a number of people who didn't get to say goodbye to colleagues. They didn't get to choose the ending of how they left. And then there's also things like goodbye without leaving. So a person is actually passing away of a very serious illness. Their body's still here, but mentally they've left and you haven't been able to process that. And even the process of unresolved grief, where you just never really got closure. So really anybody could be experiencing this at any period of their life. And my experience with grief, I feel like, started really early. I've always been a very natural listener. And people in my teens would be coming up to me all the time, telling me all their problems, always crying. And then when I started experiencing my own losses with relationships in my early 20s, just feeling absolutely devastated and wondering why I couldn't get over it. Like, why couldn't I just snap out of this like my other friends? And it was an understanding much, much later that I was actually starting to grieve early, like real grief, even though it wasn't, in fact, a romantic relationship. And so I think when we start to like make space for grief, it can be empowering, because we realize we can have our own experience of loss and we can unpack that. Two, it can be terrifying, because it's like, well, how long is this going to go on? How long am I going to feel this way? It can be exhausting as well. So there's a lot to consider when we're having a grief process. But the biggest beginning is identification and sort of an acknowledgement, like, what grief am I experiencing that I think I understand? And you don't necessarily have to know all the technical titles, but I think it's really important. That acknowledgement piece is huge, because if we don't create a witness for ourselves, who else is going to hear it, right?
Yeah. And it's not easy, because really, who wants to grieve?
Yes.
Like you said, it's tough. It takes time. It takes energy. So, I think not unusual for a lot of people to try and ignore it or avoid it.
Yeah, and that's a huge part of grief, is that it's not easily avoided. Like in the earlier stages of grief, and when I say early, it can be like 6 months of grieving is considered the early phase. You get a lot of intense emotionality and there's a lot of like understanding of this loss, but you can carry out grief as your brain and body are understanding what this means, this new definition of yourself without this thing, this person. And that can be very inconvenient. So, you know,
yes,
yeah, like
very inconvenient,
very inconvenient. Like 5 years after my mother died, feeling like I wanted to cry my eyes out at something. And I thought, oh my God, like I thought I was over this. And you just feel irritated. You're still upset about something that you thought you dealt with, you know, but you know, 10 years now after she's passed, having much more self-compassion for myself, because it's a process. She was my mom. I didn't know her for a day. I knew her for as long as she was alive, right? So, mm-hmm. you know, it's allowing ourselves to feel that, to sort of allow ourselves to have that beautiful experience of like that beautiful attachment of love that we had, or appreciation or respect, whatever that attachment was. And then saying that it's all right. And sometimes too, I should mention that how the mind processes emotion is not linear. And so it's not just process. You don't process all your feelings in one place. So when we have memories that are associated with emotion, they'll get scattered in different places in the brain. And so sometimes we are dealing with like little sub pockets of that connection, whatever that connection happens to be. So you might have this come up again and again, but it's because your brain's dealing with different aspects. Mm-hmm. So it's like little micro stories you're getting resolved, if you will, right. Or even little micro traumas. So it's not for us to like feel disappointed in ourselves that like we haven't just dealt with this. Like it's like, oh, this is another part. And now that part is teaching me something about myself.
Right. And it's really important to have compassion for ourselves in that, to be able to go through that as well. And compassion for others who are going through it too.
That's the biggest part of grief. Actually, in research now, it's identified that people who really get stuck in their grieving process, the main difference between people who move on with health and those who do not is self-compassion. Mm. And really for those of us who don't understand what compassion is really just like self-love and care surrounding an issue. So rather than saying like, I can't believe you ate that chips for them, like because you weren't feeling your feelings, you could say, I am sad. It's okay to be sad. I'm still going to have some chips, right? But I'm not going to call myself names because of that impulse.
Yeah.
I'm going to honor all of those parts of myself that need to be nurtured. And right now that nurturing includes eating, even if it's not what I want. Does that make sense?
Yeah, absolutely. And it's so interesting that that's what the research is showing.
Oh yeah, it's beautiful. And in fact, when I started uncovering that, I was like, well, that would really make things easier. If I knew that at different parts of my life, you know what I mean? Like, it's right? Just so funny. I'm like, damn it, I wish I knew that before.
for sure.
But then it's, you know, I feel it is like a nice gift now to understand that, because now the whole world is going through different aspects of grief. And just like you said, it's being able to understand that someone else's grief is going to be looking different than mine allows me to be more compassionate to everybody, including myself.
And I think that's what that piece is what's made the biggest difference, especially like really shortly after losing my friend Jeff, and really especially given the fact that my fiance knew him for over 20 years, so they were good friends, and really recognizing that, oh yeah, how I am going to feel and experience this is going to be different than how he feels and experiences this. Like to be able to also give me space to do and feel what I need to feel, but also to give him space to feel what he needs to feel and to do what he needs to do about it, has made a huge difference for me and him, because I could see how also I could be looking at him and with the idea of like, oh no, he's doing it wrong.
Yes. You know? Yes. It's so true. And then you would be sort of trying to put your experience onto him, right? Which would be frustrating because he wouldn't be feeling that he was getting what he needed for himself.
Yeah.
Or he would be feeling judged. And that can be a hard, you know, it would be hard for him to process, honestly. And people do process grief differently. Some people go completely numb. It's part of their fight or flight. They go into like a freeze for a while. They have no feelings about their loss. In fact, in the last year, a couple of people have expressed shame to me at my office about that experience. Mm-hmm. And I was so relieved to be able to tell them, like, this is actually normal too. Like, I don't want you to think that just because you're not crying hysterically about the loss of your father, that you didn't deeply love him. It's just, this is how your body's processing this surprise, essentially. And the surprise to you is going to take some time. And some people, they get a lot of rage. They need to like go to the gym and beat the hell out of like a boxing bag for a year, you know, and then all of a sudden they experience sorrow. So it's very unpredictable what your grieving experience will be. And it does help when, if you're grieving things as a group, to be honest about where you are about it. Even if a person can't completely understand, at least you've told them. And then they can understand that maybe part of the support for you is space or like distance. Like maybe you just need to be alone for a while, or you might need a lot of like physical contact. And if they, and if you're in different places with that, communicating what you can each give yourselves without feeling like the other person's stretching too far of where their comfort zone is. Right. Mm-hmm. So if like your partner needs space and you need connection, then having some connection time together for you, but when he's alone without you, that he is processing on his own and in his own way. And that's okay too.
Right.
And it does require some courage. Those conversations can be difficult, especially because they're vulnerable, right? So it's not to say that you wouldn't necessarily get frustrated with each other or like upset, feeling like the other person isn't honoring your needs, but this is how we learn about each other, right? This is how we grow, is by having those difficult conversations that can make us feel vulnerable. And in that time, I think grief will also bring up like the people who are really your people, I think as well, that you feel really emotionally safe around to have those conversations. Some people just aren't there yet necessarily, and won't be able to, you know, as Brené Brown describes, like hold space for you if for your shame or for your discomfort. Right. So in that process, like feeling safe for yourself is important. You don't necessarily have to tell everybody what you're going through if that's not a safe experience.
Yeah, and that's important, because I mean, I even recognize going through this whole process right now that in the past, I definitely wasn't even aware of the need to hold to hold space for other people who are grieving in my life. I mean, I think back to some good friends who lost their mothers when they were younger. And even just thinking back to like, oh man, was I really there for them in the way that I could have been?
Yeah. And probably not in some ways, yeah. But it's okay.
Yeah.
Because you didn't know.
Yeah.
Like I had, you know, some people after my mom passed from long-term cancer, I should mention. So I experienced a lot of grief with her that taught me a lot about the aspects of grief. So I experienced anticipatory grief when she was like very ill for 5 years with therapy, with chemo. And then she passed. And then there was that surprise, that disbelief kind of. And then there was the actual bereavement grief, which was after. And then I had people say some really, in retrospect, they felt like they were being well-meaning with their advice. But they just hadn't experienced that loss before. So they were telling me things like, oh, it's good she didn't suffer. And, you know, and now you can move on because you're not taking care of her. She's not sick anymore. And I'd be like, yeah, I wish it was that simple. But I didn't have the courage to tell them. And I also didn't feel like, because they couldn't understand, that I would be able to continue this conversation. But then what was interesting is that I had a couple of friends about 3-4 years later lose their parents to cancer in the same way. And I had people calling me like just so embarrassed that they had said the wrong thing. They were like, I wasn't there for you. I have no idea. That's what you were trying to tell me, that was things were bad. They were feeling ashamed, but you know, they just didn't know. And then they were on their grief process too, right? So they kind of like, it was this weird, it's sometimes I feel like grief is like a door. Once you go through it, like you can't go back through the other way, you know?
Yeah.
And so it's one of the, it's like an initiation. It's like a rite of passage in some way. And once you go through that door, every time you learn about a new aspect of grief, I feel you're bettered, because you learn more about yourself. You learn more about your way of relating to other people, and even just being able to like understand pain that is not the same as yours.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. And when we know better, we do better.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Yeah. Changes yeah, what we have to offer.
Exactly. We just keep educating ourselves. And then what was weird is that when I really started to like process all of my grief, I could not stop seeing it everywhere. I was like, oh my God, they're grieving this, they're grieving that. And then I would just say it gently, like, I think you might be, you know, grieving this a bit. And then it would surprise me how people would open and then also feel relieved that they weren't like insane. Yeah. And they were like feeling really uncomfortable with a process that they thought should be fine,
know? Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Which then makes me think, especially grieving during a pandemic is just, it's so different because, I mean, usually there are, you know, certain rituals that you can go through, especially when you're dealing with kind of, again, the loss of a loved one through by death. There are rituals that you can go through in order to share and to share in that grief. And that's really looking different right now.
Oh yeah. Big time. And I think that's really hard. So I feel like what is coming up with this pandemic is there's going to be a lot of need for closure, right? Mm-hmm. So a big part of grieving is like, there's an old story that we have about ourselves with this before our loss. And then we have to move forward with a new story. But this new story doesn't mean we didn't feel our pain and we didn't acknowledge our pain, right? This story is integrated. But in the middle of a pandemic, some of the options we would do to process this can be different, right? We're not going to have funerals. We're not able to go and give connection to somebody. We're not actually able to go to our office and say goodbye to our coworkers who we really had close relationships with, right? We may have to move our house because we've had to relocate or downsize, right? So there's a lot of like little things that people feel like they can't do. And that's when I think it's important for us to create our own closure. So at work, I do this a lot. I have people do like journaling can be really helpful for grief, not only because it's a safe space, you can get out your feelings, but I really like the post thing I learned actually. I did a lot of like in exploration with shamanism about like 5 years after my mom died. I got really interested in the mind, body, soul connection. And I just really loved the connection to community and sort of like that emotional pain and sort of like even spiritual pain were welcome at the table. And there's a lot of rituals surrounding like burning things. And sort of like releasing and saying goodbye and having active conversations with things that I really thought was beautiful. And I started bringing that into my work at work and saying like, could you write yourself like a letter or could you write a letter to that person or that situation? And would you want to like rip it up and burn it? Or would you like want to flush it down the toilet or bury it? And people would look at me like I was insane. And then I said, you know, just trust me, give it a try, see how you feel. It's really about, the end goal is we want you to feel like you can get rid of some of this burden, right? And everybody would come back and say they felt better. And they all had different ways of honoring that, which I loved. Some people just, they took it to a whole new level. One of my clients like did a bonfire. And it wasn't a person who passed, it was a person. So this is where our biggest grief I think is fantastic. Like if we really understand our grief, it was a person who she had always hoped to connect with, but just the relationship always hurt her in a way. And so she kind of said goodbye to not only the sort of this ideal that she had hoped this person would be, but also goodbye to the relationship she never had. And then it's honoring the person that she wants to now be, right? So it's all of these things that can be acknowledged. And she really just, she said it was like a weight had been lifted off of her.
Amazing.
And it's not that it's all perfect. Like this is a person who is still in her life in a capacity. But, you know, it's ways for us to honor ourselves, which I think is really important. And so in pandemics, when we can't do what we would normally do, we can think about, well, how can I honor myself at this moment? Right. And some, it doesn't even have to be that kind of intense ritual. It could be just like in this moment, I'm honoring the difficulty I'm experiencing. I'm honoring the feelings I'm processing. I choose to do that by going for a walk or by going and doing a meditation or having a cry or washing my hands or having a shower. Like they can be very simple acknowledgements and they don't have to be like broadcasted if it's a private thing for us, or we can choose to create community in other ways. So for example, like you could meet people at a park by social distancing, right?
Yeah.
And read poems to each other, or, you know, it could be a whole bunch of, you can be really creative. And I think creativity is where grief can really be supported. Being like thinking way outside the box, thinking that, and actually where it's really helped me with that is my son Nolan is 3.5. and all of the things that we do right now is like chalks outside and like imagination games and like turning things into forts and like, how can this bin that I have turn into like a water play area? And I think he just sees everything as an opportunity. And it reminds me as an adult that everything is an opportunity.
Right. Absolutely. Yeah. Because even, I mean, even during the pandemic, something that, especially after, after Jeff's death, that, you know, I really wanted to just go out there and to be able to connect, because I know that, that makes a difference for me to hear other people's stories and to get more understanding, about, you know, loss and grief. So I even came across, a Facebook group created by David Kessler, who's works with grief in the States, and he created a Facebook group, kind of a grief support group for people just to connect, you know, during the pandemic, because that there can be that that benefit in really being with other people, but in a different way, so that you can be heard and you can share. As well. But I love the idea of, you know, and, you know, connecting with your son and just like, again, you know, just finding different ways to do things, really.
Yeah, exactly. It's just about, you know, just finding some ways to really connect with yourself, but not push away your pain. Yeah. And it can be a very fine line, right? Because the moment you connect with yourself, you're going to feel pain, you're going to feel yucky, and it can feel uncomfortable if you're not used to that experience. But the more we allow ourselves to have that experience, the faster we'll heal, and we will learn things from those experiences. So at the very bottom of my grief experiences often came a lot of joy. So really happy memories would surface, like very big pieces of myself would emerge, like, wow, I have this beautiful quality to do this, or I really like this part of myself, or I really want to explore this other thing. And ultimately, oddly, which is sort of came through my work too, is I realized how good I was at talking about loss at the very end of my experiences with loss, and actually how it was a joyful place for me, because, like, personally, I found out through my loss, of my mother, and then I had some postpartum depression, I realized how empathic I am and how deeply I feel emotion. And I think it had been an uncomfortable thing for me to witness in myself for years, and then realized how it could be a really beautiful strength. And so, you know, how could I creatively burn through emotion in my body? And I started just exploring different types of exercise, different types of music, and it just became more like playful. And then, ultimately, like, more trusting myself, my own wisdom emerged too. So like, it really deepened my experience with myself. And David Kessler talks about, like, you know, the experience of grief and meaning in your life. And for me, the meaning was a deeper connection to myself and deeper connection to the work I'm doing with people and why it was so important for me to help people heal on a total self versus just their physical body. It became more like a mission. And for me, that was a new meaning, which was cool. It hadn't existed before.
Mm, that's fantastic. Yeah.
Yeah.
So there is that idea of, like, again, kind of experiencing the emotions and the feelings around grief. But could you speak a little bit to, like, how grief impacts us physically and can impact our physical health?
Sure. So grief, firstly and foremostly, is often like a stressor. Yeah. So when it arrives, our brain is interpreting the loss of that item as like a fearful problem. That item that we had comfort and safety with is gone. And so our reward system in our brain that's affiliated with love, like oxytocin, and a specific part of the brain that's involved in fear, the amygdala, they freak. And so what will happen is we actually have physical symptoms that go with that because of a rise of stress hormone, and that stress hormone is cortisol. So in the first 6 months after a loss, there is actually a rise in cortisol, which will induce changes in the brain and actually create sort of a need for us to pull back and, like, nurture. And we know that that changes blood pressure and heart rate. So it is very typical for people in a early grief period between 6 weeks to 6 months to actually have heart attacks or heart episodes because of all of that extra adrenaline, but also the shock of the loss. We also have changes in our sleep because of all the extra adrenaline and cortisol. And we will actually have changes in the immune system. So the immune system becomes dampened because of that experience. So it's all literally happening. It's been studied in many different types of papers, from both bereavement to group trauma. And really, what we know is that that process in that first 6 months will start to shift over that period of time. It'll be more difficult, of course, when we're in a larger experience like a pandemic or a natural disaster or war, because our body is still trying to keep us safe, and cortisol is part of that safety. So what we will experience with high cortisol peaks can be very physical. So a lot of people report heart palpitations because of the cortisol. They will feel nausea, a lot of nausea. I see in my office that we find out is grief. And that's because cortisol shuts down our gut. So if you're running from a bear, our fight or flight system will shut down our digestion because we don't have time to process when we're running, right? And so if we have that happening for a longer period of time than 10 minutes, we're going to have a shutting down of serotonin in our gut. We're going to have a slowing down of our ability to process food. So people will get nausea, or they'll get really, really hungry because some of those systems have gone a little wonky, if you will. Mm-hmm. We can also get headaches. We can get a lot of body pain, new experiences because of that shutting down of the immune system. I see a lot of people come out of a grief experience with IBS and they don't know why. And it's because their cortisol is still affecting their gut. And so when I'm working with someone who has told me, for example, they've had like four or five losses within a couple of years, my first start with them is actually supporting their stress hormones and making sure their hormone system is coming back online. Because some people, the brain doesn't get the message to shut down that stress response. And so they're still having this relationship with cortisol. They still feel really scared about weird things. They don't know why. And so I work really hard to get their system back online. I will, if their sleep sucks, we get their sleep back on. If they're exhausted because they've basically been running from a bear for the last 6 months to a year to 5 years, I'll work exclusively on their energy. And a lot of people will be confused by that until they start to feel the difference. So they're like, why aren't you working on my diet? Why aren't I doing some sort of crazy change in my diet? I'm like, because you can't handle it. Your body is exhausted. You are so tired. Grief is exhausting. So we will work on that first. And then they start to notice, they tell me, so they're like, my sleep is better. You know, my memory's improving. I feel a little less snappy. Like they're starting to notice their system is settling. And then we start to work on some of the other stuff that went online. So getting your gut feeling a bit better, working on gentle exercises to help their system rejuvenate. I will do some emotional education at that time. So emotion just is supposed to whip through the body, and we give them like exercises or activities to work with those emotions. So if a person tells me they never feel angry, but they're frequently frustrated, I'll get them to do something that's more vigorous. It could be jumping. It could be like dancing angrily to a song. It could be screaming in their car. Something to get it out of their body, you know, so that their body doesn't have to carry all of that emotion, but also so the things that we're doing to help them physically will actually stick. Because if we have suppressed emotion, it actually makes the process continue. It kind of creates these loops of trauma in a way. And Peter Levine, for those of you who are not familiar with this gentleman, he does a lot of work with trauma, and he describes the body will get stuck in sort of physical memory of trauma, and grief is a trauma of its own. Mm-hmm. And if we can't actually process through the body, then the person can't really heal. So I do a lot of work with giving people like physical activities to do when their emotion shows up, rather than saying, I'm not going to feel sad. Like, I get them to do things when they're sad. Does that make sense?
Yeah. Yeah. It's so in a way, really kind of, again, connecting that mind body.
Yes. And I mean, admittedly, I get a lot of resistance to it because, you know, people are coming in for a naturopathic doctor. They want a pill. They want to feel not sad, and they want to go home.
Yeah. Magic pill. Like, give me the magic pill.
Yes. And I'm like, I'm so sorry. You picked the wrong person. We're going to really work through this. And you know, and that's okay too. That's part of the grief process, like feeling like afraid to that they're going to come apart. From what I've experienced with grief is that the body and mind will allow us to process emotion as well as we can handle it. So it's not going to all come in a huge chunk if we're not able to deal. Like, I believe the brain and body actually support us, but you know, sometimes it does become overwhelming and a person does need help, and that's where I come in, you know? Yeah. But a lot of it is about getting the brain and body to feel calm and to trust each other in this experience. And then also have the person understand that it's normal because grief is so chaotic. It feels chaotic.
Yeah. And I love the way that you described, again, grief as a stressor, because we've on different podcast episodes, we've definitely talked about stress and cortisol and kind of the impact. And yeah, again, grief and loss is another stressor that we have to manage and adapt to physically and then emotionally as well.
Yeah. To that point, when a person is dealing with all of the, like, I feel like that's like a purging in a way, a purging and like in a strengthening, but what I'll also have people start to focus on gently is not positivity, but joy. So I don't like the word positive for grief because I feel like it forces people to feel something that they don't feel always. But what I think most people connect to is genuine joy, like things that actually make them feel happy. And why we want to do that is for a couple of reasons. We want to remind the brain and themselves that they don't, in fact, they're not always going to feel like this forever. But also that once we feel joy in the body, it shuts down sadness. It actually shuts loops off. So we get a bit of a break from feeling all of that discomfort. But then in that joy, we're actually activating the calming part of the nervous system that is active when we're resting, which is called the parasympathetic nervous system. So I'll often give people homework, like to read a funny book or to read or go watch some funny movies that they love, that make them feel good, because it gets them to shift themselves out of that, but it's also a conscious shift. And so we're allowing the brain to expand its definition of pain. I can feel pain, but also joy, right? Mm-hmm. And it will allow the system to go, I have been stressed, but I'm also capable of rest and rejuvenation. And that bouncing sort of feeling, or like, I like a pendulum a little bit better, because it's kind of like, we're feeling sad, we're feeling happy, we're feeling sad. That allows the nervous system to kind of regulate itself. And that's real resilience. Mm-hmm. So resilience is really about allowing all the things to be there. And seeking out also things that make us feel happy, passionate, and that is healing. And so, you know, there will be a lot of guilt if a person, especially if a person's had a loss of a person that they were married to or have a deep partnership with, and they feel badly going out and having fun and going to the movies or, well before a pandemic, maybe watching it, but like going on a walk or something that they enjoy doing with them, and then feeling guilty that they felt joyful on their walk. Right. But if we allowed them to be on their walk, enjoy the walk and feel sad, that's resilience.
I'm really glad you said that, because with you talking about joy, I just imagine some people may really kind of, really resist that, because that may in their mind lessen the memory of someone they lost, or they feel like they have to always be sad, that joy almost makes them think that they're forgetting what they should be remembering.
For sure. Yeah.
Or not honoring that person, or not honoring, you know, what that loss.
Yes, exactly. And sometimes actually mementos can really help with that. Like if it's a loss, like you can bring the person with you. If you had like a chain, like, you know, a necklace they gave you, or you can wear a shirt they bought you, or you can bring a poem with you to read that, you know, reminds you of them. Mm-hmm. So it's a way for you to have the old and the new go together, right? So it's not one or the other, right? It's allowing yourself to have a new experience with the person in your mind. And that's actually very healing for the brain. Because the brain's like, oh, I don't have to completely ditch this whole story and create a whole new me. Mm-hmm. I just have to add to this me now. And then I can create new things that make me feel loved and supported. And getting a new connection, a new sense of love, a new sense of joy is very healing, because we ultimately keep needing to connect, right? So we want to encourage healthy, happy attachment. It doesn't have to be one or the other.
Mm, that idea of the, you know, using that momentum is so beautiful in terms of really, again, kind of integrating, you know, the loss with the new and with the joy and with, you know, those other aspects of our lives and moving forward.
Yes, exactly. In fact, a lot of times after death, people will say like, oh, I see this blue jay outside my house, and this blue jay just reminds me so much of my mom and blah, blah, blah. And now I'm seeing the blue jays everywhere. And then it's just like a way for them to be with them without having to say anything to anybody. But also, like, it can also be like just a little secret between them that they are together, just not in the same way, you know? And so, you know, I think really anything, even metaphorical, can be really important.
Yeah, that's lovely. So in talking about kind of the involvement of our stress hormones in grief and loss, it kind of makes me wonder about all of our other hormones, because as we know, you know, our hormones aren't separated. They have an impact on each other, which we talk about all the time on this, on our podcast here. And especially, you know, again, the vast majority of our listeners would be going through different hormonal changes with perimenopause and menopause. Mm-hmm. How does that connect with grief?
Because cortisol and a few of its parent hormones supply sort of the juice, if you will, for estrogen and progesterone and testosterone. So commonly, I see a person who's either lost someone in menopause, or they're going through a loss, like a loss of a child moving away to school, they will all of a sudden start to have hot flashes if they hadn't had them, or they'll be kicked into menopause as an example. And they're like, what the hell? How did this happen? Why is it happening? The same with perimenopause, a woman who was sort of, because perimenopause, I'm sure your listeners are aware now, it can be a long period of time. It can be like 10 years before menopause, but we can have huge shifts in the hormones in terms of menstruation. Women will all of a sudden start to have shorter periods, or they're like crazy, or that they stop. And it's because those like feeding hormones to the estrogen and progesterone are screwing up their ability to have a regular rhythm. And to that, I would say it's okay. So the biggest thing is that we know that this stress is affecting their hormones, right?
Yeah.
So again, you would be working on both at the same time. Mm-hmm. So I would be working on stress hormone at the same time that I'd be working on hot flashes, mm-hmm. at the same time that I'd be supporting them with that experience, at the same time that they may be talking about the grief of going into menopause earlier than they wanted, or that they're aware that they're perimenopausal and that they're sort of hovering. So some women, when they start to have early signs of perimenopause and they're like 45, they start to freak out. Even if they were completely finished with their family, it just feels like to them another hurdle they're going through. Like, oh my God, now I'm going into this new phase of my life. I don't feel prepared. And it's at the same time that this other thing happened to me, right? So sometimes, you know, I really like to say, let's wait and see what's happening with the body, right? So let's nourish the body. Let's, you know, some women, I need to test their hormones to figure out where they are. Some of them, it's very obvious it's a stress hormone thing, or their sleep is a mess. Mm-hmm. And that's contributing. But I say, let's wait and see what your body needs. And maybe nourishment is what it needs right now. And waiting means like getting their stress hormones supported with herbal medicine, or making sure they take less stuff off their plate. But there's others that, you know, they're in menopause, and it's going to be a challenge because their hormones weren't balanced before the grief experience.
Right.
So what they're learning is that they don't have control over their body the way they thought. And that is a grief as well. Mm. So there's new grief that arises because of an initiating grief. And so we make space for all those griefs, right? So I just name them all. so that the person knows that they're experiencing them and that when they arise, it's okay. I do experience this kind of challenge with like weight and menopause with women who are so pissed that they've gained this extra 10 pounds because of cortisol. And then also they're menopausal, so it's harder to lose weight because of the hormone shifts. And so rather than really focusing on like how much this sucks, we acknowledge that it sucks, but then we also work on things to help the system feel calmer rather than getting them to attack like a lot of weight loss stuff if that's going to be another stressor, you know?
Right. Yeah.
So, you know, in this phase, like I've seen some women, I'm working with someone recently who just lost a parent and they thought they were going into perimenopause, but really it was just their period went wonky because of the stress. Mm-hmm. So a couple of months and they're doing okay, you know? So a lot of it is, you know, allowing women to have an open conversation with their frustrations and then us taking a step back, really seeing what's happening and then getting a sense of where the woman needs the most support.
That's fantastic. So, and you're offering a lot of support, not only for, again, for kind of the general public out there in terms of grief, but you're working on really providing some support for clinicians, for other naturopathic doctors and other healthcare professionals to help to support people with grief. How would, if anyone again is really interested in this and wants to connect and with you and find out more about this, how could people get in touch with you, Aoife?
I have a website called AdaptableU, like the letter U, .life, that has some information for clinicians regarding learning more about how to support their clients or patients at this time, as well as there will be some programs I'm running going into the early fall for people who are in a grief process to help them understand what's happening in their body and mind and to sort of help them navigate it safely and so they can come out of it not feeling so disorganized. So they'll be both through that website and as well I'm also on Instagram. I'm just Dr. Aoife ND on that and Facebook right now. But yeah, please, I love hearing from people. I feel like we learn more from each other as well. So yeah.
Awesome. Thanks so much. Well, definitely, post the website and again, even links to you on Facebook and Instagram on the show notes. Thanks so much for joining me today, Aoife. I feel like we just like kind of maybe touched a bit of the surface of this conversation, but yes. I'm sure if you're up for it, we may have more.
I'm so open to that. It's a humongous topic because it's so nuanced,
yeah,
and because it's so individual in many ways. Like it's universally experienced, but the experience of grief is very individual. And there's no real right way to do it. So, and there's no really like any rules to how it happens, right? So, I mean, that can be both, again, scary, but also empowering because we can create all kinds of cool stuff to help us.
That's awesome. Well, I mean, your experience and your expertise in this area of grief has, and hearing how you describe how we feel and the impact on the body. It just, it makes so much sense to me and even just has really clarified things in my mind. So I'm sure that that other people out there listening will have the same sense as well. So thanks so much.
You're welcome. Thanks for having me.
So now we're totally going to switch gears, and it's that time in the episode to talk about my super mom moment, my mama mess up. And this week, those two are all rolled into one. Last week was Frankie's second birthday. She turned two. And I mean, interesting to have a birthday party while we're dealing with this pandemic. So definitely I felt a little bit of anxiety and concern about, you know, what her birthday would look like. And you know, it really turned out well. We had a small party with just close family members. You know, it was really wonderful to have our grandparents over. You know, it's been months since we've seen them, and also months since she's been able to see her cousin, who is also 2 years old. However, there's a lot of mama mess ups in there because I'm not necessarily the best at planning or hosting parties. I just like people to get together. So, you know, some of my mama mess ups are included, some of the details like, oh, what are we going to eat? And, oh, yeah, thankfully her grandma got some cupcakes. And then it was time to, you know, sing happy birthday. I didn't even think about a candle or having candles or even a special 2-year-old candle for her to have on her cupcake and blow out. Thankfully, I had a candle in the house so that she could use. And thankfully, we had a lot of support from family to bring everything together, and we had a great day. So, you know, a super mom moment to definitely, again, have that party for her and make it a special day. Lots of mama mess ups in there as well, but it all worked out with help, of course. This week, my mama must have is really related to a bit of this conversation and something that Dr. Aoife brought up around grief, and it's self-compassion. So especially those of you who are really not connected at all with self-compassion or self-love or self-care, this may be helpful. And this has definitely been something that's been helpful for me in the past as well. Dr. Kristen Neff, I believe in the States, is a researcher and provides a lot of resources around self-compassion. Her website has a lot of great free resources that have some guided meditations and exercises. So that would definitely be my mama must have for the week, to really connect to that self-compassion. Or if you just want to kind of switch up your meditation practice or need a little bit of extra help relaxing and you're, you know, interested in getting into the self-compassion aspect of things, you can go to her website, selfcompassion.org. I'll put a link on the show notes so that you can connect to those resources there and check them out. I know that they've definitely been helpful for me. So all of you mamas out there, thanks so much for joining us today. You can find our show notes at our website, perimenopausalmamas.com. You can also connect with us on Facebook and Instagram. We would love for you to subscribe and leave us a review and a 5-star rating if you enjoyed this episode. And we would love to hear from you. Please tell your perimenopausal mama friends about us too. Thanks so much. Stay safe and healthy, everyone. We'll see you again.